Podcast. I'm Dustin Lavelle. With me is, let's go around the room, say our names, everybody.
Pat McDonald, film critic for HollywoodChicago.com.
Lauren Fendelman, not film critic.
Adam Fendelman, publisher of HollywoodChicago.com.
All right, let's see what's up, first up on the docket. Adam, you wanted to talk about WALL-E.
WALL-E, Lauren and I saw the film yesterday. It comes out on Friday, but actually we found out today that we're allowed to publish it on Thursday. And, you know, we both went into this looking for different things. Lauren's probably most anticipated film of the year.
I really, really, really was excited about this. Not just because, I mean, he's adorable, but for the environmental aspect. I mean, I'm a big environmentalist, but it's also funny and smart. The reason why I got really emotional watching the movie was after the movie, just coming from my whole entire life being environmental, seeing that go so live and so mainstream with such a powerful message that a high amount of people will view is really says something about our society at this point, which maybe is stupid for me to get so emotional about, but I mean, this has been a big deal in my life for so long, and just to see it that big, it was really great.
Now, a lot of people aren't going to WALL-E for you know, kind of what you're talking about right now. You came out and got kind of teary-eyed, and you see this green message in it, and there definitely is that message in it. And the other important thing here, too, is they have two very, very memorable characters. WALL-E is a very memorable character. He's been branded, you know, pretty hardcore going into this film. Going into it, you have his girlfriend, Evie, who's another very memorable character. You know, that was the biggest problem we talked about in our last podcast with Cars. You don't remember any of them.
Right.
This one, WALL-E is your defining character. His girlfriend is a memorable character, too, and I think that's critical in one of their films. And in the Pixar lineup, I think it's been one of the best they've ever done.
Oh,
really?
The funniest.
Wow, that's saying a lot,
It's
man.
Definitely the funniest, I think. Script-wise, it was hilarious. Like, I was literally, like, cracking up in my sleep.
Coming out, Wanted obviously is a big Chicago connection, has the power of Angelina Jolie, it has Morgan Freeman. This is really, I'm seeing it as kind of James McAvoy's coming out as a man party. I know he's been in a lot of different roles and a lot of different films for different reasons, but in this one I think he's grown up.
He's more manly in this one than Atonement?
He's got a gun and the bullets can curve.
Yeah, but did it have the sex scene that Atonement had?
It did not have the sex scene.
And
it's interesting. Wanted is just an all-around entertainment. It's pure entertainment and has everything actually but sex. You know, and it has Angelina Jolie in it, but there's no sex scene in it.
Well, like, spoiler warning.
No! There's a little PG kissing scene, but aside from like...
Don't you see her naked tattooed back?
Actually, we got into a debate about that yesterday with the Chicago critics, and somebody had brought up the nude scene in it, and I said, "Yeah, you see her full backside nude," and two of the other critics said, "No, I was there. They cut it off at the crack," and I said, "I'm sorry, they show the whole thing," and then we ended up having to put it up for debate, and I was right. You do see the full backside nude scene, but apparently some
like
other
you
people...
could forget that.
I don't know.
Angelina.
I don't know. If I see their crack, I'm there.
I don't know why.
I'm in for the whole enchilada, if you will.
I'm glad you won that and it wasn't some other, like, whose crack did I see?
I just imagined
was it
the
McAvoy's?
Rest of
yeah. Oh, yes, that's right. It's Jim McAvoy. That's why he's a man in this film. Because I saw his whole naked backside.
But I will say, in the way that The Matrix innovated in terms of, you know, they did some things for the first time that had never been done before. Wanted has done that, too. You know, so you see some Matrix-esque technology and CGI and effects, but some things are completely original that Wanted did that has never been... You know, I've never seen a bullet hit each other in midair and just clink off, and I've never seen bullets curve in general. You know, so they have special effects that they've invented.
I have a question, though. Do we think that people will go to see that movie based on A, Angelina Jolie, sex, okay, B, people shooting up each other and the action part of it, or another reason?
I think, yeah, all of the above. I think it's one of those things, and I haven't read, it's based off of a graphic novel. In the graphic novel, the main character, the woman, is black. It doesn't look anything like Angelina Jolie. And it's, from my understanding, it's one of those things, again, where they, like they did with From Hell a few years ago, where they just put Johnny Depp in a story that was loosely based off of a graphic novel, but then very, very far from what the actual book was. I, from my understanding, Wanted is going to be, they take the first 10, 15 pages of the novel, kind of, and then just go with a whole new premise, just so they can make a movie with a lot of shooting Angelina Jolie.
Because this is actually more about James McAvoy.
Okay.
You know, it's Angie's in there as
Angie.
You know. Well,
they're intimate.
First name basis. Me and AJ the other day.
The film's about him.
AJ.
You know, it's about him in a 9-to-5 job where he hates his boss and he wants to, you know, tell her off. And she, you know, she's in there as he's her prodigy. But the film's about him.
Well,
what's Morgan Freeman's role? He seems like to be playing the same.
He's the man on top. He's you know, telling all the assassins what to do, and he's.
Now, what's the Chicago tie? Because I know we remember watching, you know, especially with Hollywood Chicago, the filming taking place. But you had told me earlier that it really has a Chicago feel, more so than a lot of movies,
you know, so,
that are just shot here.
So you know you're going to see a lot of Chicago, obviously, in The Dark Knight, but I was actually really surprised how much Chicago I saw in Wanted, because it filmed here, but it also, you know, filmed elsewhere, too.
Right.
But I was very surprised, actually, how Chicago-centric it was. Like, they integrated the CTA so much, and the film couldn't have been that without all the train scenes and, like, LaSalle Street and the Dodge Viper scenes, and it was very integrated in Chicago. And then there's this whole side of it in this textile factory.
Now, is it a fake city?
No, it's Chicago. And
they say
it's recognizable.
Okay.
Yeah, and like,
but
I
it's
mean,
in the future.
No.
You don't know?
It's not in the future.
No, not in the future? Okay.
I mean, there's like definite scenes where it's like, that's on Belmont, and I've been to that ATM. You know, and it's recognizable to
is it an alternate universe sort of thing? Like Watchmen is?
No, it's actually like, that's the liquor store that I've been to. And
so it's like present day.
Yeah.
Real. Okay.
Yeah.
No, they didn't, like, change anything, like they do in Batman, where they change everything, and it's
right.
Chicago,
in Batman,
like,
obviously,
they souped it up to where, like,
well, Batman, it'll look like
Gotham City.
Gotham City.
Right.
You know, this one looked like Chicago.
Last weekend, we had a couple movies come out. Get Smart, of course, won at the box office, which we gave a poor review. Patrick, you gave it 2 out of 5.
I gave it 2 out of 5.
Which, it was getting mixed reviews. I think it's around 50-some-odd percent in
yes,
Rotten Tomatoes right
exactly.
now, which is not very good. But it did do well at the box office. Coming in fourth at the box office this last weekend was Love Guru, which pretty much universally panned. A lot of people didn't like it. It was obviously not a commercial success. But, Adam, you love the film.
Well, I gave it a semi-positive review. And, you know, looking back at it, obviously, you know, I stand by what I said.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
And, like, the film's production budget was $62 million. And it earned $16 million in its first 4 days of release. It's obviously a financial failure. And Rotten Tomatoes, it's sitting at a dismal 16% based on 116 reviews. So, yeah, across the board, consensus is that the movie sucked, and it failed. But I found some redeeming value in it. I laughed, and a lot of people laughed in it. There was a pretty interesting emotional story in terms of, like, the meaning behind this for Mike Myers, and, you know, maybe you don't buy off on that. Ultimately, you go to this film, and do you laugh or not? You know? And,
right.
And I did. And to me, that was an overwhelming positive. But from our review, we had overwhelmingly negative anger, not only about the film, the conversation evolved past the film and just onto me.
But I wanted to ask you, who did the screenplay on this? Do you recall? Is Myers
he
involved?
Did.
Yeah, Myers, this was his character that he kind of developed in the mid-90s. yeah, it was, I think, one of the first that he's done that's not been Second City or Saturday Night Live.
His dad died in 1991, and then after
George Harrison
died, he felt that he was destined to do this.
His dad was from Liverpool. But the point, when I see the trailer for that, and I see Vern Troyer there, I check out immediately. Because I say having a midget in a movie is like a cheap joke, unless it's a station agent. It's a cheap joke, and all he highlights in the preview are the cheap jokes involving him.
Well, there was a lot of negative feedback, too, and there's a lot of people who are complaining that he's exploiting that.
The whole marketing in general is kind of interesting. There's a lot of the two big complaints people have had, I guess, politically with the movie is that it exploits little people. He's just using that for jokes. And Hinduism, it's very a lot of Hindu action groups have spoken out against it pretty strongly. And what was really interesting about the film, I thought, in terms, I know Mike Myers, he wrote the script, and he always tells this touching story about, you know, it's about his father and the spiritual journey he's been on, and he really wants to speak a special message along with the humor. But Paramount came out and said, and Mike Myers has also said, this is geared for basically 13-year-old boys. This is what they've marketed it towards.
Wow.
Yes, they actually, the New York Times, they did not even run any advertisements for Love Guru in the New York Times. And when they asked Paramount why they didn't do that, I believe it's
that
Paramount.
That simply makes no sense, because I don't see a 13-year-old saying, you know, I want to see something about a guy who's a guru.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think a 13-year-old even knows what a guru is.
I think if they marketed it to 13-year-olds, that's not who came.
Well, see, here's what I want to kind of talk about with it is, Mike Myers has had a long history of, you know, I think that I would have been more of his target audience, and I'm
sure,
25 years old, because I grew up, you know, with him on Saturday Night Live, thought he was hilarious. Wayne's World, I've seen dozens and dozens of times. I saw Austin Powers when it first came out in the theater. So I mean, I've been on board with everything he's done. Then he hasn't made a movie since Cat in the Hat. Not counting the Shrek movies, which, you know, he's just a voice for. And so he really hasn't done anything in probably about 8 years. So for a 13 to 15-year-old boy or whoever they're marketing it to, really has no frame of reference to who Mike Myers is. And what's also interesting is if you think about that whole thinking of comedy movies as an art form of themselves, right now, characters like the Love Guru, even in Austin Powers, a Wayne Campbell, would not work very well. People like more realistic things. They like the Seth Rogans, the 40-year-old virgins. They want some kind of something that resonates as like a real-world experience. And so this past weekend, we've had two Chicago natives from Second City. You know, both Mike Myers went on and did Saturday Night Live. Steve Carell tried out for Saturday Night Live, but instead did the Dana Carvey show and the Daily Show.
Right.
They both go up against each other at the box office, and one, you know, did both didn't do very well critically, but one definitely won out with the basically the same audience that they were looking for.
And we talked about that Entertainment Weekly article, which I don't know if you've read or not, but the point is, in that article, Myers is sort of a wanted man in Hollywood. He's pissed off a lot of people, essentially. And his perfectionism is such, my way or the highway. And Love Guru, is a perfect example of a my way or the highway movie. Here's what I want to do next. Okay, I've got my power, and here's what I want to do next. I want to do something about this journey I've been taking with the Deepak
Chopra. Yeah.
Chopra. How about this journey, though? I mean, because I saw him on the late night show, and I've heard so much about this journey and this, you know, with his dad and you know, a guru who he based this off of or whatever, and I'm like, but why make fun of the guru? Why make fun of something that is so personal to yourself? Like, I can understand making it into comedy, but to me, it's literally making fun of it.
Uh-huh.
It's not taking it seriously and putting it a funny twist, okay? It's not taking something serious and making it a comedy. It's literally trashing something that is beautiful or something that could be you know, have a decent message. And I haven't seen the movie, so I don't know. From my take of it, from looking at this, as someone who is into that type of thing, it's somewhat insulting to me.
Yeah.
Well, Adam, what's your reaction to all the feedback?
Well, you know, I think it's like, if it really pissed off this many people and that many people hated it, why are so many people so riled up about it?
Right.
The one interesting thing that I really heard from this one is there was such a hesitation to even go see the film. And there was so much anger before people even seen it.
Right.
There were so many people so mad about it and hadn't even seen the film.
Right.
The trailers and the messaging or the exploiting, whatever it is, obviously turned off a lot of people
very interesting about it is he makes this movie 2008, 10 years ago about this time. He did a little bit, I guess, sooner than this. He did Austin Powers. Same sort of thing. No one had any idea what this movie was about.
Right.
No one has any frame of reference to these man of mysteries, my man Flint sort of films. You know, like it's not something that people were going to readily get in the general populace. Comes out to the box office, doesn't do very well, makes a little bit of money, but all of a sudden it builds this huge franchise. But at the same time, no one was hating it the way that they're hating Love Guru.
And
is it possible that Love Guru will build an audience on DVD like Austin Powers did?
No, I think this was a one-hit wonder. I mean, I don't think we're gonna see more of the Love Guru.
But it's very interesting that people would turn on him like that.
Well, there was a lot of that conspiracy also in The Happening. There, a lot of people were going in saying this is going to stink because his last two movies.
Yeah, well, people say that. I always hear people say that every time a new one's coming out. They're like, "Oh, I hated every one of them since Stuart Little." Whenever they hate everything M. Night Shyamalan writes.
I think our best comment of all from a reader on this one was someone who said, "Was it hard for you to write this review with Mike Myers' fully erect penis in your mouth?" you know, and it's kind of like...
Well, I answer that, was it?
No, I wouldn't know, but I would say, like, you know, we've had negative reaction to things we've said before, and, you know, when you're a critic, people are always going to agree with you or disagree with you, but we've definitely had more anger and fire with this one than other ones, and there was something about it.
But I went back and looked at all the ones we've done recently. The Happening, no one seemed to care. No, I don't think there was any comments on that one.
It didn't fire people up.
Why is this one firing everyone up? I don't get it.
Because I think there's a universal, across the board, it was going to stink, and Mike Myers sucks, and this is a stupid subject. And why would anybody give it a positive review? And that's what it comes down to.
I think it fell victim to stigma.
Yeah.
You know, and it's people already have preconceived notions
But they do about the
information age.
Also.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's you're gonna have preconceived notions about anything.
I think that it's so.
But I think Get Smart fell into the same trap because people went in there, and there's no way you're gonna have Steve Carell match Don Adams or be able to do what Don Adams did. So the smartest thing he did, I think, in that film was to not try to...
I agree with that, but also, too, I think if you take the three best episodes of Get Smart and rewrite them as a movie, you would have a roll in the aisles type movie. To make an action hybrid with the miscast and Hathaway in it is not...
Yeah, everybody's been blowing that up, and I just didn't see it.
I went into it, you know, and I love the original series.
Right.
I went in with very little expectations, and I enjoyed the film.
Okay.
But, like I said, I agree with you completely. It's completely... You can't go... You almost can go in there without thinking anything at all of the original series.
Right.
And it was an action movie, which caught me off guard. The humor was very different.
Right.
Wasn't a lot of the visual humor and the wordplay humor.
No.
Not a lot of the shticky Mel Brooks kind of thing.
There was nothing in the script, really. It was just they really wanted to show the action as much as the comedy.
Yeah, yeah.
Which surprised me, that's all.
Which is why the film did, I think, better with people that hadn't seen the original series versus...
And I'll tell you, in the critics' room, very few laughs. It was like a church in there. So... Not to say that that's it. Entertainment Weekly brought out their top 100 films of the last 25 years, the new classics, they called them. So we got that list together, and we're going to talk about our favorites on it, our top five.
Well, first of all, the list is very interesting in that they're possibly classics. Some of them, I agree, they're classics. A lot of them, I'd say the majority of them, are just movies that were completely different.
Yeah.
They were different in a way that people hadn't seen before, and some of them were okay movies, some of them were really good movies, some of them were probably bad movies, but they created a lot of buzz, and they did something that was so different that it speaks out in your mind as its own entity.
And they affected the marketplace.
So that's what the list really is.
And they affected the marketplace.
And they really affected the marketplace. So that's the first thing you have to take into consideration when looking at the list.
So for example with that, I mean, on this list, there's some that actually obviously stand out like a sore thumb. Like, why the hell is that on there? For example, number 42 on the list is Clueless. And I would say, like, all right, Clueless is not going to be in my, you know, top whatever of standout films, but there's something Clueless did.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
It was totally different. It created its own lingo.
Right.
It had people, especially people in that age group, changed everything about themselves.
Well, that's what intrigued me about the list, because it didn't really speak. It spoke about how, in the last 25 years, with the information age and the intense interest in movies that has developed, that these are the 100 that really made an effect.
Right.
And you can argue back and forth about them, but I was interested to hear what everybody's top five was, what two they felt didn't belong on the list, just to truncate it, and then some films that didn't make it that you think should be on it.
So I'll go ahead and start with my top five. My first has to be Schindler's List. This is an epic film that has always stuck with me and is top on this list. Rain Man is a defining Dustin Hoffman role that I think people emulate and has affected film for a long time. Pulp Fiction is something I've seen again and again and again. I would say the surprise for me for this list is Memento. A lot of people don't even know what that film is or haven't seen it, and that film has been haunting to me.
I think a lot of people have seen that movie.
Some people hate that movie, and I loved it, and it really stuck with me, and it was kind of gets in your brain.
Definitely an event film.
And I would say Fargo, and, you know, despite what people say about the Coen brothers, that, it's like, I can't even think of how many times I've tried to even say that, don't you know, accident and again and again. So
that was really brilliant.
Those are my five.
Yeah.
And what two do you think don't belong?
Other than Clueless. The interesting thing about Clueless is it was based off of Emma, which is a book, obviously, and they've also made another movie. It's exactly the same exact storyline. They just took it and added their own lingo, which is really what made the movie different.
It's definitely watchable.
I would say in terms of one that doesn't belong, Speed. I mean, I know, like, all right, there's been a lot of talk about Speed and Keanu Reeves and everything, but the film, it just doesn't do much for me.
Right.
And it's a Hollywood product and another, like, terrible Keanu Reeves acting, and it's like, why are you in Hollywood? And it was an excuse to make another one because the first one made some money, but this isn't quality filmmaking that's giving me meaning and memory here. You know, so that one really itches me.
I'm surprised you didn't say Swingers as, like, a positive. You love that movie.
I love Swingers, but it's not my top five of these top ones.
This was really difficult for my top five. I'd say number one, Edward Scissorhands, which is probably my second favorite movie of all time. I love it. It was completely different from every other movie that you will... I mean, it's very distinctive. Everybody knows Edward Scissorhands. It's very different.
But also, you have... mental problem with Johnny Depp.
Well, and I'm also madly in love with Johnny Depp.
Yeah,
so. Yeah. And he's just awesome in that. Because,
yeah, he is really good.
Oh, God, he's so good in that. Anyway, second, I'd say Out of Africa. That is just a really, really good movie. I was very happy to see it on the list because, honestly, I don't know a lot of people that have seen that movie. And I think it's a brilliant movie. I was actually kind of surprised in a good way that it was on it because it's a really good movie. I'd say Napoleon Dynamite. When I first saw Napoleon Dynamite, no one else had seen it, and I thought it was hilarious.
We saw that about 8 months before it.
Came
I remember
out.
Before, not
wow.
only before it came out, but before it was a, you know, anyone's like...
Before MTV picked it up.
Yeah, before MTV picked it up. And so it was kind of, you know, now it's like, I'm sick of seeing it, but, you know, it defined...
I love that movie. I love that movie.
Right. And Children of Men and A Room with a View, both completely different movies. I loved Children of Men. I thought it was very different. I loved the ending. I loved everything about it. I thought it left... It brings me coming back to it a lot. And A Room with a View is very different also. And Office Space, because I love Office Space.
And what two do you think don't belong?
The only one I put on there that I absolutely disagree with was the South Park movie. I thought, if you're going to put a movie like that on the list, then I thought Beavis and Butthead would win out. But maybe that's just my generation.
And what were the two? There were several
that I was surprised was not on there. American Beauty, which we talked about. Really shocked that that wasn't on there because it fits right in along with that. My favorite movie of all time, Last of the Mohicans. Maybe I just love that movie, but I love that movie. The Mission, which is definitely a classic. I'm sorry. It's a classic. I mean, it is, and it's a classic of the last 25 years.
Very good.
Restoration and Scent of a Woman. Oh, I thought Scent of a Woman fits in that. Doesn't it?
Definitely,
I mean, how do you know that would occasionally,
no,
okay?
No, that's, I
mean, Sense of a Woman.
I'm just going to run through some of these that kind of stuck out that I'm not going to do my top five, but I'll say something I was really impressed that came on, that made the list. Blue Velvet made number 4. I think that's a little bit overlooked sometimes. Crumb at number 14, which is a film about eccentric comic book artist Robert Crumb. And they didn't put American Splendor on here, which Robert Crumb is actually one of the characters in that film. But I think that one obviously did better commercially, though Robert Crumb probably is more of what you would consider a classic. I have kind of some issues with calling some of these classics. Like, I don't know that Napoleon Dynamite is going to stand the test of time. It's a funny film, and I love it, and I saw it several times, but...
I think
South Park won't. I've gone back to rewatch South Park. Not as good as whenever you first saw it.
Yeah.
Talented Mr. Ripley.
No.
I didn't even really enjoy that much the first time I saw it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things on here. Also, I felt like putting The Player on here was just kind of felt like they were just filling a hole where they needed to put a Robert Altman flick. it's a good film, but. You know, if we're going to do the top 25 of the last, you know, or the top 100 of the last 25 years.
Prairie Home Companion better than The Players.
Well, yeah, and so, you know, it's like they have Hannah and her sisters at number 7, and I feel like they just kind of had to throw a Woody Allen film on there. And
yeah, but Hannah and her sisters is...
It's good, it's
not
good.
Not maybe for our generation, but I definitely know some people that would definitely think that it's a classic.
I like it, I also like Purple Rose of Cairo, and so...
So what couple of films in here really?
Yeah, what are the five that you like?
The five that I like.
That you like.
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, I think, is a great one.
Yeah, I like that too.
I think Pulp Fiction is great that they have that on there. Spinal Tap, because it kind of set the bar so many different ways. Let's see here, Evil Dead 2. I spent most of my high school weekends watching that film over and over again. And No Country for Old Men, even though it just came out this last year, I think it's a great, great film.
Yep.
Let's see, I think I've already mentioned some that I think should be taken off.
Well, what, is there any glaring omissions?
Yeah, the two films, Mannequin and Mannequin 2
Mannequin!
On the Move.
I
can't believe it. I don't know. Is Shawshank Redemption on here?
No.
No. That's huge.
I mean, that's kind of one that
that's
I think it's a big guy film, but
great.
If we're talking about things that TBS plays a lot.
That's wild. Number 5, Hannah and Her Sisters.
It's a good film, but I just it's up on their high.
Right. Number 4, Pulp Fiction, of course, and that was number 1 on the list. Number 3, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. That one really got me. That one really got me when it came out.
Aesthetically and action-wise.
Right. It just, you know, it had everything that I like in epic-type battle films. Number 2, Crumb. I totally agree with you. If you everybody's from a dysfunctional family, let's face it. There is no, nobody gets out of here without any dysfunction. And that's the ultimate dysfunctional family film. And number one, Goodfellas. I've seen it 20 times. I love that film. And the two that I don't think should be on it, Jerry Maguire. I just that one gives me a pain behind my eye. And then the second one, sorry, Adam, Rain Man.
Really?
I thought that's a classic. I thought, you know, my opinion is that they treated autism for an effect, sort of like a special effect, you know, that I'm not saying that there's somebody, not somebody out there. We've seen the piano playing guy in 60 Minutes and things like that. But the point is, I felt it was a little too simplistic for that kind of subject.
Okay.
And that's just my opinion.
You just think there should be less Tom Cruise films on the...
Right. And the two glaring exclusions in Donnie Darko.
It is. I agree.
But, you know, if they're going to put criteria...
Yeah, I mean, if some of these other ones, Donnie Darko definitely fits better. It's a better cult classic.
And then I don't know if anybody... Has anybody seen Krzysztof Kieślowski's trilogy, Red, Blue, and White?
I've seen part of it.
Okay, well, they had a couple of other foreign films, but that's my favorite.
That's it for this week, Hollywood Chicago Podcast. Check us out on the web, hollywoodchicago.com.